Welcome back in. Hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, David Beauclair, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Scheduled to be joined shortly by Corey Curtis from News 2. So looking forward to that conversation coming up here in just a few minutes. Right now, reacting to Jeremy Fowler's list at ESPN.com, coming out with the top 10 quarterbacks in the league heading into this season. He interviews executives, players, and coaches for this.
It's been a really
list.
Good series.
It really has.
I've been enjoying it. The some people don't like the no names on the quotes thing, but Jeremy Fowler's connected enough. You know that these are legitimate conversations, and it's been a really, really enjoyable, I think.
Joe Rexroad checking in from vacation on Twitter saying that Stafford getting to a playoff game with that godforsaken franchise in Detroit him a wizard.
No. If the best quarterbacks are transformational, you know, he has the talent, but the best quarterbacks transform franchises. Matthew Stafford had more than enough opportunity to do that.
Well, maybe some franchises just can't be transformed, David. Maybe Detroit's on that list.
I think any franchise can be transformed. No franchise is beyond help.
Neil texting in on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. You guys are on crack. Herbert is better than Ryan Tannehill.
Okay. Herbert might be someday. Not right now.
I mean, did you watch Ryan Tannehill play last year? It's pretty good.
I mean, the guy, six game-winning drives in the fourth quarter in overtime.
Yeah.
Let's start there. Like, when you talk about what you need a quarterback to do in the NFL these days, start there. You need him to make plays when it matters, and the guy did that.
Ben on the text line says, don't be sleeping on Herbert and Wentz this season. Frank Reich could certainly bring out the best version of Carson Wentz. I have no question that he could bring out the best version of Carson Wentz, but for Carson Wentz to get a vote right now to be a top 10 quarterback, I think it's ridiculous.
I agree.
And the quote associated with it says, the culture in Indy with Chris Ballard, Frank Reich, completely different vibe there compared to Philly. I don't care about how well you play week to week. They're feeding the consistency, good line and running game. Will be absolutely perfect for Carson. This coming from a veteran NFL offensive player that Jeremy Fowler is talking to.
Well, and that's to me, that almost speaks why he shouldn't get a vote, because you're talking about all the things he's not going to have to do. You know, he's not going to have to improvise because he's going to be well protected in the pocket. He's not going to have to throw the ball nearly as much because he's going to have a great running game there. Like the Colts are the perfect situation for Carson Wentz because they're going to minimize his responsibilities relative to what they were asking of him or requiring of him in Philadelphia.
I got a texture that says, Joe's right. Until proven otherwise, if you're a quarterback and you end up in Jacksonville, Houston, Cleveland, or Detroit, the four teams that have never appeared in the Super Bowl, you have no chance. I will say, I mean, Deshaun Watson, legal issues notwithstanding right now, he's been a pretty good player in Houston. He's changed that franchise around.
That was a guy I didn't think would translate to the NFL well, and I was wrong about that. I can't watch that guy enough nowadays. He is about as fun as any player at any position in the NFL to watch right now.
Ron on the text line, how many elite players has Matthew Stafford played with? One, maybe two in his career. That's why they think he'll be really good this year. Look at his surroundings in LA.
And I get that, but I think he's you've been in the league that long. You've had chances to do more than you've done. And again, at 33, I don't know. And it's funny, the comments about Stafford are all like, you know, there's one, a veteran NFL quarterback quote, this will be the deciding factor on who he is. It's almost like people don't feel like they know him. There's another one from an AFC scout. We're about to find out. Or some feel he'll let you down at some point. Maybe that's true. Maybe not. We're about to find out. It's in a way that a guy who's been in the league, 15 years now. He's 33 years old, whatever it is. Not quite 15, I guess. But, you still kind of feel like you don't know who he is. to me, you should have a pretty good idea. I feel like I have a good idea. Maybe I'll be wrong.
I mean, he's been in the league since 2009.
Yeah.
I get it. It is Detroit.
It is.
They've had some bad teams there. I don't think there's any question about that. But, look, I think Stafford is an upgrade. I don't know that Stafford all of a sudden just makes L.A. these Super Bowl juggernauts that other people seem to think he makes. But this list is interesting to me because it sort of confirms a theory that I have. We've talked about Ryan Tannehill on this show and probably not getting the respect he deserves. And, look, at the end of the day, is that the most important thing? No. But you can tell it bothers him a little bit. Like, yeah. Him talking about the Pro Bowl last year, he was pretty upset. Like, that's as animated in a media setting as you'll see Ryan Tannehill get. And he was pretty open and honest about feeling like he was snubbed for the Pro Bowl last year. So, look, when you're a quarterback, when you're wired that way and you're competitive like these guys are, they see these things. And whether they comment on them publicly or not, it bothers them. And they want to go out and prove people wrong. But this list kind of confirms what I think and what I think ultimately is going to continue to be the case with Ryan Tannehill, especially now with the weapons he has. Like, I just think he's always going to be a guy that doesn't get the credit he deserves, maybe gets overlooked a little bit because, I mean, David, if he goes out this year and he has a great year and Tannehill lights it up, the conversation is not going to be, oh, look how good Ryan Tannehill's been. The conversation is going to be nationally. Well, yeah, of course he's playing that well. He's got Derrick Henry, Julio Jones, and A.J. Brown to throw the ball to. But how many quarterbacks in the league would love to have that? Which I get it. I'm not saying that's necessarily, you know, an invalid way of thinking. But I just don't see a scenario, even if Tannehill goes nuts this year and his stats look great, I don't really see a scenario where he gets the credit that Titans fans probably feel like he deserves.
The only chance he has, and no one wants to hear this, that the only chance he has for that is if Derrick Henry gets hurt and misses an extended period of time.
Yep.
And this turns into an offense that's throwing the ball 35 to 40 times a game, and he's still doing the same sorts of things that we've seen him do because no matter, you're right. If Derrick Henry plays 17 games this year, or even if he plays 15 games, all the talk is going to be that this is a run heavy offense. This is, you know, everything's predicated on Derrick Henry, and even if Tannehill throws for 5,000 yards and 50 touchdowns, it's going to be because Derrick Henry was lining up behind him.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texter that says, the same thing you're saying about Matt Stafford, people were saying about Ryan Tannehill to Tennessee.
I was gonna make that point that Tannehill is the perfect counter argument to what I've been saying about Matthew Stafford, which is that Tannehill played on terrible teams in Miami. You put him on a good team, good to better than good team, whatever it was when he got here, and he's been a different quarterback. And if Matthew Stafford can be a different quarterback with the Rams, it probably will be something to see.
So which quarterback on this list do you have the most issue with being in the top 10? Again, that's Mahomes, Rodgers, which nobody's going to have an issue with, Brady, Russell Wilson, Josh Allen, Matt Stafford, Dak Prescott, Lamar Jackson, Justin Herbert, and Kyler Murray.
I don't have an issue with Josh Allen other than that I don't think he's fifth best. I think he's too high on that list. I think I have an issue with Dak Prescott. I never know quite what to make of Prescott because everything about the Cowboys is always it's too much.
Yep.
You know, there's too it. Everything is sort of everything you do well is overblown. Everything that goes wrong there is catastrophic. Dak Prescott did more at Mississippi State than pretty much anybody else has ever done, and that's pretty telling there. So I think he probably deserves a spot on the list. If we're saying Tannehill needs to be in there, who are we taking out? I might take out Herbert until I see a little bit more.
You leaving Kyler Murray in there?
Kyler Murray's fascinating to me just because he's not he's such not the prototypical quarterback, but you know, he frustrates defenses in a way that I'm not great with him being on the list, but I'm okay with him being there.
I just can't wait to get Rex Rhodes' reaction to this tomorrow when he learns that Tom Brady's number 3 on the list. That's going to drive him nuts. I think Rex Rhodes would have Brady at like number 12. Just have him out of the top 10. Maybe not out of the top 10. Joe is a little bit of a Tom Brady hater. It took him until this year to recognize Tom Brady as the greatest quarterback of all time.
I still say Tom Brady's not the greatest quarterback of all time. Tom Brady is the guy that I would want to play quarterback for me. To me, Peyton Manning's the greatest quarterback of all
time.
That's
what Joe says.
Because Peyton, nobody dictated to defenses the way Peyton Manning did. Like Peyton he was a puppet master in terms of the way he managed opposing defenses. The problem with Peyton is, or always was, that he was so consumed with being the perfect quarterback at all times that he couldn't make there are times that he couldn't make the winning play.
Yep.
And I always use Eli as the perfect example. And you think of the David Tyree catch in the Super Bowl, right? Peyton Manning would never, ever, ever spin out of a sack, plant his back foot and just heave the ball down the middle of the field and hope for the best, right?
Yep.
Peyton, he's incapable of that. You know, he'd find some receiver underneath, or he'd just throw it out of bounds, or he would make the smart play every single time.
He's not improvising,
not the
there.
Winning play. So if you're talking about who, in terms of what the position is, who's the best to ever play it, it was Peyton Manning. I don't think any question. If you're asking me which quarterback would I take of all time to put on my franchise and start a team with, Peyton wouldn't be top 5 on that list for that reason.
By the way, back to this list for a second. Matthew Stafford last year was ranked 10th. Now
he's
6th.
Gone up.
He had an average Matthew Stafford season last year, and
moving
he goes
up,
from
baby.
10
the,
to 6.
This trade has made a legend of him. And that's where this is different than the Tannehill situation, because everybody just assumed Tannehill was carrying Marcus Mariota's clipboard.
Yeah.
You know, like no one ever imagined he would get on the field here. It was only when he got on the field and showed that he sort of like Matthew Stafford just getting out of Detroit has suddenly, you know, it's
he's been liberated
from
the Detroit Lions. We'll continue this discussion when we come back. Got some of your thoughts to get to as well on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and Ryan Porth has some praise for Major League Baseball as well. That's a change of pace. I'll get to that more coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tune in to Nashville Sounds Baseball on ESPN 94.9. Tomorrow, the Sounds return home to First Horizon Park and will face the Louisville Bats, the AAA affiliate of the Cincinnati Reds. Nashville Sounds Baseball on ESPN 94.9, presented by 312 Pizza Company. I'm going to make it out to couple of Sounds games this week. Looking forward to it.
Me too.
I bet so.
I haven't been out there in a while. I need to get out there.
Park is awesome.
It is.
I think I could just go sit in that park out there and watch like a rainstorm come in. I love that place. It's awesome.
I always forget, though, too.
I don't know why. Rainstorm is the first thing that came to mind.
Yeah. I always forget, too, how good AAA baseball is.
Yeah.
You know, because you think of it as minor league baseball, or at least I do, first and foremost. And then I get out there and I watch those guys. I'm like, man, they're good.
Yeah.
Because, like I watch a lot of Vanderbilt baseball during the spring usually. And, you're looking at these guys and you're saying, yeah, that's going to be a pro player. That's going to be a pro. You know, these are really good prospects and everything. And then you watch these guys for the Sounds who are just, I mean, not even a step, like a tenth of a step away from the major leagues.
Yeah.
And it's good baseball.
Right now, reacting to the list that Jeremy Fowler from ESPN has put out for the top 10 quarterbacks in the league. He interviews players, executives, and coaches. Ryan Tannehill, not on this list. Apparently, he did receive votes with about half the other quarterbacks in the league that were honorable mention. Mark from Paris on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, saying, guys, you're missing the point with Tannehill. Can he win a game when defenses take Derrick Henry away like in the playoffs against the Ravens. And, David, I think certainly that has got to be the next step for Tannehill is if you get into a situation where Derrick Henry is being shut down in a game and you've got to find a way to win it through the air, can you do that in the playoffs? He's done it at times in the regular season. He's made some big throws. Can you win those type of games in the playoffs? And to Mark's point, that did not happen against Baltimore. Some throws were there for him to make that he didn't make. Missed A.J. Brown going wide open down the sideline on the left side near the end of the game as well. You would think that the offense with Julio Jones better suited for Ryan Tannehill to do that this year, but no question about it, that's got to be the next step in his career.
Well, to your point, and it was the same way at Kansas City a little bit. There were a couple throws in that game in the AFC Championship game that were sort of and that's the thing. It's he's looked like a little bit of a different quarterback in the playoff games. You know, the New England and Baltimore games following the 2019 season, he didn't have to do much. So it's tough to say, but yeah, that's a legitimate concern with him. He his playoff record for his career is 2-2, but he really didn't have a lot to do with those two wins. So, you know, I mentioned earlier, a league high 6 fourth quarter game winning drives or game winning in or fourth quarter overtime game winning drives last year. Going to have to do that in the playoffs at some point, too, and that is something he has not accomplished.
So we'll continue to react to this all show long. Got a lot more of your texts to get to on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. And we brought this up a little bit earlier in the show, but a big day yesterday for Vanderbilt baseball. Jack Leiter and Kumar Rocker selected in the first round of the Major League Baseball draft. Leiter going second overall to the Texas Rangers, and Rocker falling all the way to 10 in the draft to the New York Mets. I was pretty blown away that he fell all the way to 10. I had seen the picks of him or the mock drafts of him going 6 or 7. I think I saw one as low as 8.
I think that's as low as I saw, too.
But 10, I was... David, honestly, I was floored he fell that way. And honestly, my first reaction was, I know that we're in Nashville and that maybe sometimes we're a little too close to the forest sometimes when it comes to these players. But my first reaction was probably going to be some teams down the line that maybe regret not taking Kumar Rocker earlier than number 10.
I would think. And, I'd heard a little bit of chatter, I guess, too, about, well, maybe worst case scenario, he becomes a closer. You know, all the analysis I heard last night after the pick was this guy is absolutely a starter, and he has everything that everybody's looking for, and he might be, you know, he might be the first one of the top 10 to make it to the majors too, just because he's so big and imposing physically already. You know, a lot of guys, particularly the high school kids, you know, they need physical development and whatnot. He doesn't need that. He'll make his way through the minor leagues pretty darn quickly, I would think, if he stays healthy.
And Jack Leiter, number 2 overall, I don't think a big surprise there. And we saw the last time he was on the mound, Jamie Benn of the Stars, he was tweeting at the Rangers, "Hey, why don't you get Jack Leiter in there at number 2?
Was he really?
Yeah, he was. Seems like
I hadn't seen that.
Jamie Benn's plea worked, and Jack Leiter going to be a member of the Rangers. The reaction from him, I mean, pretty universally, is this could be the true ace of this draft when it comes to Jack Leiter. A lot of that, I think, is number 1, the stuff that he has, but number 2, the background as well. Having Al Leiter as your father, people love that, and not a big surprise he went number 2 overall.
Everybody loves with the drafts, particularly with the MLB draft, is the comparables. And MLB Network last night, when Rocker was picked, a couple of their guys were throwing out Bob Gibson as a comparable for Rocker.
No pressure, kid.
If that's the case, like how does he last till 10? And they even showed, I hadn't thought of it having watched him pitch, but even his delivery is fairly similar in the way he falls off the mound. Yeah. I hadn't made that connection previously, but Tim Corbin talked about it too. He said, you know, his just utter disdain for hitters is just, you know, is is really something unique. You know, like he said, a lot of pitchers don't like hitters. He goes, Rocker really doesn't like hitters.
Does not like those hitters whatsoever.
So, you know, Leiter's an easy guy to see too, because he's, you know, he's one of those guys. He makes it look a lot easier than it is.
Yeah.
You know, he never looks like he's under duress out there. And I would think if you're a scout or a GM or even teammates playing in the field with him, that's a really reassuring thing, that this guy's snapping off pitches left and right and keeping hitters off balance and just doing it and looking like it's, well, of course that's what I do. He's a good one. Yeah.
Ryan Porth, we've spent a lot of time on this show disparaging Major League Baseball for a lot of the decisions that they make. There's been a lot of easy fodder to go after Major League Baseball with, but I know there was one part about this weekend with Major League Baseball that you really enjoyed. Tell us what you mean by that.
Well, yes, I have been known to bash Major League Baseball, a sport that I have loved and will continue to love, even though they have the worst blackout rules in the history of mankind, but that's neither here nor there.
They do.
Finally, they got it right with the draft.
Yes.
They finally got it right that this is the night where there's no Sunday night baseball because it's going into the All-Star game. The MLB draft should be showcased on this night in the city where the All-Star game is being held, instead of during the Super Regionals when a lot of these kids are more focused on trying to win a national championship than where they are being drafted. Yeah. Or the draft is taking away their attention from the Super Regionals. That's always been a bone of contention in my mind, and they finally got it right in 2021.
Yeah, Jack Leiter's like on the mound in the second inning getting drafted by the Rangers.
Wasn't it Dansby Swanson in Illinois?
Yes. Yeah.
After beating them in the Supers, where he's on the field learning that he's the number one overall pick.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I had a similar feeling watching it last night. And, you know, you go back, the NFL draft was televised first in 1980. And so 40 years, that thing has evolved and grown and you know, we all saw what happened when the draft was held here, what a public event has become. You know, the NFL has recognized for an extended period that this is something that they can continue to use to generate interest and excitement in the offseason. It's taken Major League Baseball this long to go, you know what? We need to find a way to showcase this event.
Yeah.
And the fact that it took them this long to come to this point, you know, there are any number of reasons that it was a good move, including, to your point, you know, giving the kids an opportunity just to enjoy the moment in a way. But from a fan perspective let's take advantage of a moment in our schedule where we need something. You know, how it's taken them this long to get to this point is beyond me.
Quickly on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, got a texture that says, when you get to MLB, can you get your opinion on the rest of the season outlook for the Braves following Acuna's injury? And tell you what, that's a rough one for the Braves. He goes up making a, I don't know if routine's the right word, but a play that you see Acuna make a lot in right field. He lands and now has torn his ACL. Obviously, he's going to be out the remainder of the year. The Braves have been struggling anyway. I mean, they're 44-45 in a year where they had high expectations coming in. But now your best player is out. That, to me, kind of feels like a death knell for Atlanta this year.
You're already down Ozuna.
Yep, exactly.
So no Ozuna or Acuna.
A
lot of offense going out of
that line. So important to that team, too, just from an energy stamp. Like it feels, you know, he's one of those guys who, when he does something exciting, it feels like, okay, other guys are going to get going now, and he's not just operating in a vacuum. He sort of brings people along with him, and from that perspective, it's a big blow.
We are a week away now from SEC Media Days, which I consider to be the unofficial beginning to college football season, and predictions are already rolling out there. What's the outlook look like for Tennessee, and what do we think success could look like for for Josh Heupel in year one, taking over as the new head man at Tennessee. We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on YouTube, on Twitch, and on Periscope. Robbie Stanley, David Beauclair, and Ryan Porth here with you today on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And David, we are 1 week away from the official start of SEC Media Days,
which is very exciting.
And we'll see what Nick Saban has to say when Media Days rolls around. I'm sure he'll be enlightening as always. But this, to me, is the unofficial beginning to college football season. We know what SEC football is like. It's a very passionate part of our culture here in the South. And Tennessee, heading into a new era with Josh Heupel coming in his first year with the Volunteer Football Program, taking over a program that is in a mess at the moment after the aftermath of both Butch Jones and Jeremy Pruitt. And who knows? There still could be some developments in that area with maybe a postseason ban with the NCAA recruiting violations that take place. Still a lot to be determined on that front. But Phil Steele, who is a college football guru, and that comes out with the Phil Steele's College Football Preview every year, which makes its way around the country. It's very detailed, very good work by Phil Steele on that regard. Broke down Tennessee in his College Football Preview, and the outlook is not all that pretty. Phil Steele has picked Tennessee to come in sixth in the SEC East, finishing just ahead of Vanderbilt and behind South Carolina, so number six in the SEC, pointing out that they have more players in the transfer portal and have had more players in the transfer portal than any other Power 5 team, 25 in the transfer portal. They're the least experienced team in the SEC.
That's an entire recruiting class.
It's unbelievable what has happened there. They are, as he points out, the least experienced team in the SEC, 12 returning starters, number 125 on his experience chart, and learning brand new schemes, obviously, on offense and on defense. Expectations are not going to be high for Tennessee this year. Now, I guess the one thing that they've got going in their favor would be the schedule, and the schedule for Tennessee certainly not as difficult as it was a season ago when you're playing an all-SEC schedule, and I think five of their 10 games were against top 10 opponents at the time, which is pretty incredible to think about. I mean, you've got Bowling Green, you've got Tennessee Tech this year, Pittsburgh on the schedule as well, which is a tough non-conference game, but the schedule is a little lighter this year for the Vols. When you factor in the complete picture, where this roster is right now after Jeremy Pruitt and the disaster that was the end of his tenure, the 25 players in the transfer portal, what do you think constitutes a successful first season for Josh Heupel taking over as the Tennessee football coach? Whether that's a record on the field, whether that's a style of play, what do you think success for Josh Heupel looks like in year one?
Yeah, it's a success. I think the baseline of this is success looks like by the end of the year, you know what Josh Heupel football looks like. You're going to have to see guys not just playing a system, but looking comfortable in it and playing well. I mean, you think about it. Heupel is now the sixth different head coach for this program in 14 seasons, and that's not counting the interim tenures of Brady Hoke and Jim Chaney, right? I mean, six different guys over 14 years. You think about, say, Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt was the picture of instability for a long time, right?
Yep.
And I maintain James Franklin couldn't have done what he did had somebody, and that somebody being Bobby Johnson, not come in and actually stuck around for a while and put something in place that somebody could then build on. You know, Bobby Johnson was there for 8 years, got them to a bowl game, did the things he did that created a foundation. That Tennessee is on no kind of foundation. Oh, that being said, before Bobby Johnson, Vanderbilt had four coaches in 14 years. So this is the kind of turnover Tennessee is going through it in terms of leadership right now. So there is no foundation in place. So there's at some point, and if you're Tennessee, you're hoping Heupel is the guy. Whether he gets this program to being a top 20 or a top 10 program or whatever, is irrelevant at this point. He just needs to stick around long enough to put something in place, to make this a program again, to give it sort of an identity. And to do that, you have to create things that first year that will make people, that will make players want to come back to the program next year, that will make recruits say, yeah, that looks like something, you know, yeah, maybe I'm not going to be competing for a national championship next year, but that looks like something I want to be a part of. And get, you know, it can happen more quickly in Knoxville than it did here for Bobby Johnson in Nashville, but there has to be some sort of sense of this is what Tennessee football is. Because right now the sense is, well, Tennessee football is just a mess because they can't keep a head coach. They're not winning much these days. You just kind of have to define what it is.
I take a very simple approach to what success looks like for Josh Heupel in year one. To me, it comes down to, can he show signs of being able to develop a quarterback?
Yeah.
Like that's what you brought him in for. I mean, he's an offensive guy. We know that. We know about his history with quarterbacks. Can you find a guy that you can develop and that gives you some sort of hope moving forward here if you're Josh Heupel? I mean, that quarterback room right now, it's crowded. And that's even with Caden Salter gone now and being dismissed from the program. You've got Joe Milton coming in from Michigan. You've got Hendon Hooker coming in from Virginia Tech. Harrison Bailey was already there, a five-star guy that was recruited by Jeremy Pruitt's staff. Brian Maurer is still there as well, which I think is probably a distant fourth in this competition, but who knows what's going to happen there. I mean, Phil Steele is projecting Joe Milton, who is the Michigan transfer, to be the starter. Whether it's Milton, whether it's Hooker, or whether it's Bailey, like, to me, you've got to find a way that by season's end, there needs to be discernible progress at the quarterback position. And if that's not there, that to me would be extremely disappointing moving forward. Because, look, I look at this roster defensively, there is not much there. They have zero depth. This defense is going to struggle. I think they've got some pieces on offense where it should certainly be better than it was a year ago, just simply from a scheme standpoint. I mean, Jim Chaney and Jeremy Pruitt, what they were trotting out there last year, it was awful. It was horrible to watch. And it can't get a whole lot worse than the offense we saw last year at Tennessee. But there needs to be some discernible progress on the offensive side of the ball, particularly with the quarterbacks. And if you can find that in year one, I think that gives you a lot of hope if you're a Tennessee fan that maybe this is the guy that can modernize you and bring you into today's college football, which is so much about the quarterback.
Yeah, that's a great point, because that, you know, So much of modern college football runs through the quarterback. You know, that's your best athlete, and that, you know, that's the guy who's going to make things. I mean, if he's having fun and looking confident, whoever it is, that will inspire that sort of, okay, we're moving in a direction here. What we've seen from Tennessee at quarterback over a period of time now has been anything but that, where a guy might have a moment here or there, but there's never been a sense of, okay, this guy is going to take us places. And you know, Heupel was a college quarterback in his right. He's coached pretty good ones, not against this level of competition consistently, at least not as a head coach. Let's see what he can do. I think that's probably a really good point you make.
Well, and I think, look, I'll be the first one to say I was not impressed with the hire of Josh Heupel by Danny White. I mean, I thought there were other options out there that I would have liked to have seen be hired. And I am concerned about recruiting. Like, I think recruiting right now at Tennessee is difficult anyway, given the circumstances that they're in and just the programs that are around them right now in the SEC. So you have those challenges to begin with. I am concerned that recruiting under Heupel at UCF was going the other way. Scott Frost got them to a point where, I mean, they were unquestionably the top team in the American Conference, and that was going the other way. I mean, the recruiting was not there. That's concerning to me. But the one thing I am willing to give him a chance on and to see how it plays out is the offense, what it looks like. And if you can scheme up a way to get your offense to where it's competitive – You may not win eight games. You may not get back into contention anytime soon for the SEC East or anything like that. But right now, I'd kind of settle for just being fun to watch if you're Tennessee. That team last year was no fun whatsoever to watch.
Well, and I think also he needs to connect with the fan base in a way that that Butch Jones and Derek Dooley, really Derek Dooley and Jeremy Pruitt, you know, Pruitt, I don't think was really interested in it either. Like at first, I thought that was a strength of Pruitt. I thought like he's just a football coach. He doesn't, you know, doesn't care about the other stuff. That's what this program needs right now. Somebody, you know, but ultimately that didn't serve him well either. I think the fan base needs to feel like he's being honest with them, not to the point that where he's going to say, you know, look, we're playing Alabama this week. We got very little chance, you know, like he's not going to say that, but. Realistic and that they feel like, okay, when he's talking, I want to hear what he says, because it's not just coach speak. It's not just saying what he thinks needs to be said. He's actually talking to us about our team in a way that that helps people kind of be confident in whatever it is he has to say, because it's almost like politicians at this point, the run of head coaches this program has had. Like, of course they're in front of the microphones all the time, but nobody, you know, nobody believed what Butch Jones was saying after a while, right? Like it was just like, oh, you know, yeah, whatever, Butch, and sort of same thing with Jeremy Pruitt. I think they, you know, but Philip Fulmer was always so good at sort of, you know, Tennessee fans felt like Phil Fulmer's speaking to us. If Heupel can sort of create some kind of connection like that too, I think it would serve him really well.
But there's one part about this Tennessee football program that I think may hurt from a stability standpoint that I'm not sure they can get past. And we'll get to more of that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, David Beauclair, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, discussing the Tennessee Vols. SEC Media Days 1 week away, and the football season will be right around the corner after that. What are expectations, what are fair expectations for Josh Heupel in year one at Tennessee? And David, you brought up an interesting point, which I think is absolutely spot on, and that is the stability part of this for Tennessee. It's not been there. Six coaches in the last 14 years. And that's going to have to change, I think, before you start having conversations about, hey, can Tennessee compete for the playoffs?
Yeah.
Or like, can Tennessee compete for getting to, you know, Atlanta every other year or something like that? You got to get to that point first. Like, you've got to get back to a point where you establish yourself as a good football program. Because right now, Tennessee's not even a good football program, much less a great football program. And I do wonder if there's one part about this program that maybe prohibits them from getting there anytime soon, and that is this fan base. I think it's very passionate. I think it's great. That's a great thing to have. And I'm not saying that's a negative thing, but I think it's fair at this point to say that there's not very much patience with Tennessee and their fan base.
No.
And that is – I get it. Like, I'm a Tennessee fan. I love watching the Vols play. It was a big part of my childhood, but you've been kind of waiting for Tennessee to return to glory since 2007, basically. And they had a stretch with Butch Jones where you thought, like, maybe this is it. Like, maybe this 2016 team is it, and they're going to get back to prominence, and they were a top 10 team to begin that year. But that's really it. That's really the last time we've seen any sort of sustained success with this program. And look, I mean, last year was Jeremy Pruitt's third year. Halfway through the season, half fan base wanted him out. And everything sounds good with Josh Heupel, and it's a different situation that he's taking over. But the fact remains to me, and you can't really convince me it's any different, like if year three rolls around and Josh Heupel has not gotten this team to 8 wins or 9 wins, there will be a significant portion of the Tennessee fan base that says, all right, this guy's not it. Let's move on to the other guy. And I just don't think you can do that in this situation. I think there's got to be a little bit more leash given to Josh Heupel. And I wonder, with this fan base being what it is, how impatient that they are, deservedly so. I understand why they're impatient. I wonder if it can get to that point just based on the heat that they throw out there if things don't go well early on.
It Yeah, and that's why I say that that Heupel needs to connect with the fans in a way that other coaches haven't been able to. It's a really hard thing when you talk about the passion and the expectations of the UT fan base, because you need to somehow or another create realistic expectations without actually telling the truth, though, you know, in certain occasions. But I think that's part of that's part of where the previous coaches have gone wrong. They've sort of let the fan base set the narrative for what this team is or should be. And you know, initially, like Butch's brick by brick thing, calling them, people got that.
Yeah.
But after a year or two, when they only got so far, and when things when Butch sort of just sounded like a broken record over again, like people eventually tuned him out. And you know, like Phil Fulmer went 5-6 in his fourth year, right? But as I mentioned last segment, he had that connection where, you know, people sort of felt like, okay, I trust Phil, I like Phil, I'm listening to Phil. And then, you know, after that, he goes 10-3, 10-3, 8-5, 11-2. You know, he was able to endure and get through that. And that's sort of, you know, Heupel needs to create a relationship with the fans where they're willing to trust him if things don't go exactly according to plan. And that hasn't been the case for a while.
Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Steve from Mount Juliet, who wants to weigh in. Steve, thanks for calling in to Robbie and Rex Road.
Hey, morning, guys. Enjoy the show.
Thank you.
What year was it when Butch Jones was there? We were playing Texas A&M at College Station, and I think we were ranked number 5 in the nation up until that game.
Yeah, that was 2016.
Yeah, I mean, we lost almost every game after that game, and we found out that we didn't have a very good strength coach, and because like two consecutive plays, our defensive backs tried to tackle one of their running backs, and then they hurt their shoulders. It's just, but yeah, I'm like you. Ever since that point, it's just, but it's been progressively going downhill since we were national champions. But I'm ready for things to turn around. It's been way too long.
The point is that it's been long enough that it's not going to be a quick turnaround right now. Like, it's not going to be Nick Saban going to Alabama, going, 7-6 his first year,
and then
12-2 the next year. And, you know, they've been ranked number one at some point every year since Nick Saban's second year. I mean, that's the sobering reality for UT fans, is that it's been long enough now that, you know, it's going to take a little time. And it's gonna take some tough love from Josh Heupel toward the fans and the fans towards Heupel, but everybody needs to find ways to maintain that love.
Well, it's an interesting balance too, right? Because look, there is a great tradition, there is a great history of Tennessee football, and if you're a fan, like, you don't want to compromise on those things. Like, you don't want to be like, okay, well, we're happy with a 7-5 season. So just traditionally, you're not happy with a 7-5 season if you're a Tennessee fan. But I think it's time for the perspective to change a little bit. You've got to find a way. This is kind of like the conversation we were having about the Predators, rebuilding. Like, that's essentially what you're doing right now if you're Josh Heupel. You are rebuilding a football program from the ground up.
Yeah.
That's essentially what you're doing. Tennessee's got a lot of resources. There's a lot of things going for Tennessee. Obviously, the fan base is huge. There are millions of Tennessee fans out there, and that's great. You've got one of the best environments in college football when things are going your way. But this program, I think, is so far away from being, you know, the Georgias or the Floridas, certainly the Alabamas of the world. Like, that used to be the conversation that we would have every year, is, okay, how close is Tennessee to Georgia, Florida, and Alabama? And if I'm a Tennessee fan this year, I'm not even really having that discussion. My first discussion is, how close is Tennessee to, like, Kentucky and South Carolina. Yeah. Can you beat those teams on a consistent basis? Because lately, the answer has been no. You can't beat those teams on a consistent basis. When you get back to that point, that's when you can start to aim your sights towards Georgia and Florida and the big boys of the SEC.
And to your point, you don't want to get comfortable with 7-5, but you need to understand that 7-5 right now is an important step. Whether it's this year, whether it's next year, if it's 2023, you have to get to 7-5 before you can start getting to 10-2 or whatever. So that sort of needs to be the target for the short term for Tennessee fans, I would think, because that is part of the building process. You know, whereas, you know, a school like Vanderbilt, when you get to 7-5, that's always going to be a big deal. Like Bobby Johnson and I had that conversation one time after 2008. He said, I asked him about, you know, have you turned a corner here now? Is it? And he's like, at Vanderbilt, he goes, it's never going to be easy. He goes, even in the best case scenarios, it's never going to be easy. Tennessee, it certainly will be easier than it is at Vanderbilt. And, so when you get to 7-5, then you can think, okay, now we can start putting 7-5 behind us and keep moving up. But at this point, you got to get there once or twice.
Well, and it's going to be interesting, too. Like Danny White, I think he's got a very impressive resume as athletic director. I love that hire when Tennessee made it. As I said, I was underwhelmed with the Josh Heupel hire, and it kind of felt like to me maybe they punted a little bit too early on the rest of the search and just immediately went with the guy that Danny White was comfortable with. My question is, I mean, the fan base's expectations are one thing. How long of a leash does Josh Heupel have with Danny White? That ultimately is what matters, because I believe where this program is, like I think Danny White, even if it doesn't work out with Josh Heupel, I think he's probably going to get to make the next hire of the football coach, unless it's just a total disaster with Josh Heupel. But my guess would be Danny White will probably still be in place making the next hire for Tennessee football as well. How long does that leash last with Josh Heupel? And maybe he doesn't have to make a next hire. Maybe Josh Heupel's here for 15 years.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I thought Heupel was sort of an easy, sort of safe move for Danny White, but it's probably not the worst move in that, given all the uncertainty and all the things we've talked about, all the foundational sort of things that are not in place with this program, it's probably not the worst thing for an AD and a coach who already know and understand each other and know how to work together, so that when Josh Heupel comes to Danny White and says, hey, I need this, there's not a big discussion of, well, what do you need that for? Don't you have this? They're sort of coming from the same frame of reference. So I think that probably is a good scenario for now.
Coming up next, we will get back into a discussion we had earlier in the show regarding quite the development yesterday between Italy and England in the Euros. People were irate that game ended in penalty kicks, and that got us thinking, what is one rule in sports that you absolutely despise? Let us know on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.